interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind a woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 601. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind a woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you do get yourself behind a woodshed. And it's pretty much that simple, and people who do what I suggest find that out. We go in as prepared as we can, and we find out we didn't learn so much, and so we had to go learn some more real quick, but we're positioned in the right way that we didn't make the big problem for ourselves, and we can recover a little bit on the things we didn't know about. The things that we thought were so that just ain't so. And that's what they've done to us. So many topics to talk about, so many things to go through, and yet we don't need it all. If everyone would just get involved, they'd take their passion and try to protect themselves in that passion that's being taken and wrested from them, we would get back to the organic establishment fairly quickly, notwithstanding the occupation. As I said, there's savings clauses. And so that's the thing we go look for when we're reading. But getting behind the woodshed means being prepared enough that there are no surprises. In that regard, maybe the October surprise that everyone was waiting for is being fashionably late. What could be the game-changing October surprise in the run-up for the 2024 election? As October draws to a close, think about this, as October draws to a close, one might wonder whether the much-talked-about October surprise, a game-changer in the run-up to the election day, really did occur. Sputnik has picked up on key events which could crucially influence the 2024 race. So here's the deal. A couple days left before that election, so the October surprise could very well be fashionably late. But Sputnik decides that they're going to pick a few, and I think we can read them. It's pretty interesting what they've said, and I started looking at these, and they did pick them up. They did choose them, and they could be a lot. But again, it's not just one. Sputnik picked the Iran strike on Israel October the 1st, followed by Tel Aviv's retaliatory raid on October 26th, has once again underscored the waning influence of the United States in the Middle East. Furthermore, it highlights the Biden-Harris administration's inability to iron out the escalating tensions in the region. Number two, the sex trafficking charges against Sean Diddy Combs were leveraged by Republicans to bash the Harris campaign and Democrats over their long-standing association with the rapper, who apparently belongs in the same company as convicted sex offender Jeffrey Did Not Kill Himself Epstein and Harvey Weinstein. The third they're choosing is Elon Musk's active participation in Trump's presidential bid, which was called the October surprise by the Washington Post. Musk contributed over $75 million to a Trump-supported PAC, a PAC, Political Action Committee, in the last 3 months. Sputnik then believes maybe it was the liberal mega-donors poured millions into Kamala Harris's campaign. The sitting vice president ended up raising over $1 billion. Dollars, a billion with a B, bravo. Think about this, folks, how much it takes to run these campaigns anymore. And most of the people they talk to do not vote, do not elect the officers that they're being talked to about. Think about this. Think about this scam. Hey, $1 billion is in less than 3 months, something that has never been done by any other presidential contender. Was it maybe Kamala Harris facing plagiarism accusations regarding her 2009 book, Smart on Crime? In contrast, Joe Biden was forced to withdraw from the 1988 presidential race campaign due to similar allegations. Could it have been the FEMA's inadequate response to the crises caused by the hurricanes Helene and Milton, which ravaged the southeastern battleground states, sparking a public outcry against the Harris administration? I thought those are pretty interesting things, but actually I'm not so sure that any one of them does. I'm just not seeing the reflection of any of it, but there they were. What do you think, folks? Are we still waiting for the fashionably late October surprise? And it wouldn't be a surprise to find out that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has been tampering with the elections. From an article here at reclaimthenet.org, you too can find them, just as I do, and just pull them together, try to make a context so that we understand what we're looking at, and how this is all working, and how it's not working, actually, and where we're going to fit, how the path we need to take as we move through this, see if we can get ourselves to the other side as unscathed as possible and still well, watch the place crumble, because it's planned to crumble. Do we want to be in the crumbling building when it happens, or do we want to choose to not be there? And that's what I've been trying to show people to do. Senators demand answers to SISA's role in the 2024 election oversight. U.S. Senators Roger Marshall, Bill Hagerty, and Eric Schmidt have sent a letter to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, regarding its involvement in flagging online content. CISA is an agency within the Department of Homeland Security, and the three Republicans want to know how it is preparing for the November elections, given, as they spell it out in the letter, CISA's past mistakes that put the agency in direct conflict with the First Amendment. The senators specifically want to know how CISA is organizing and working now to avoid repeating those same mistakes, namely monitoring, flagging, and censoring political speech. Even more specifically, the point is to make sure that there is an acknowledgement from CISA that it will not engage in the same kind of activities this electoral cycle around. The letter cites the House Judicial Committee reports as the basis for the senator's belief this type of censorship has happened back in 2020. Quote, breathtaking scale and scope, close quote, is how these three senators interpret the committee's report so far, indicating that the censorship had indeed carried out in collusion between the government and private big tech companies. There's your public-private partnership in a word. And we understand through what the definition I understand of fascism is, it's government and corporations getting together and working out for their mutual benefit, certainly not yours. That's fascism. So here we have the public-private partnership is a form of the fascism, and this one isn't really even authorized. It doesn't matter, it seems. The letter points out that the committee found that CISA was in cahoots, quote, working with the Election Integrity Partnership, EIP, which got established ahead of the 2020 ballot to, in its own words, quote, empower the research community, election officials, government agencies, civil society, organizations, social media platforms, and others to defend our election against online behavior harmful to the democratic process, close quote. But the senators quote the committee that the found less lofty proclaimed goals in reality translated to, quote, a consortium of disinformation, close quote, that had the Stanford Internet Observatory, SIO, at its helm, according to the letter. CISA's role in EIP was vital. Just to illustrate the pains the current White House seemed to have gone to try to obfuscate the entire endeavor, CISA was performing its vital role along with yet another entity not readily identifiable as part of the United States government apparatus, but clearly acting as part of it, the Global Engagement Center, which the senators say was housed within the United States Department of State. To avoid any near future and, in general, abridging of speech effort similar to what was unfolding around the United States presidential election, the senators would like to make sure the DHS officials were truthful when they assured Congress that the practice had stopped. Quote, it would be helpful to have a response in writing to the questions below to ensure the CISA's prior assurances are honored as we enter the last weeks of the 2024 election cycle. If we are to restore and maintain trust in our elections for all Americans, the time to act is now. We request a response to these questions no later than the COB on October 22, 2024, the letter concludes. That date having come and gone without a peep of accountability also is not an October surprise for us. So I wonder if that was why we hear this next report. The large-scale cybersecurity exercise postponed due to the disinformation about the purpose of the event and its proximity to Election Day. This reported on October 31st, 2024. And I hope some of your little ones doing the trick-or-treating got a little bit of rain on them. Always cheers my heart when I hear that that's going on. Live in an area that's the first day of rain is that night. So I always had a chuckle out of that. Anyway, VIA here, the Armed Forces Communication Electronics Association International, After careful consideration, AFCEA Atlanta, a chapter of the AFCEA International, and its event production partner, Federal Business Council, FBC, are postponing the 2024 Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, and Infrastructure Conference, originally scheduled in Atlanta, from November 6th and 7th, 2024, and a pre-conference tabletop exercise during the setup on the 5th. A rapid and unanticipated rise in rhetoric and threats stemming from the disinformation about the purpose of the event and its proximity to Election Day contributed to the decision to postpone. Out of an abundance of caution, and because of a number of governmental agencies were unable to participate, we made this difficult decision so that we can deliver a high-quality and meaningful event with deep and rich engagement across industry, government, and academia, and full participation by all stakeholders. If you aren't understanding about the sustainability of all this. Now, Keith, I think, is the name of the website owner. He makes these comments. Anyone who thought that the timing of the event was strange is clearly nuts, peddling disinformation, probably racist, etc. I wonder why, quote, a number of government agencies, close quote, wouldn't have been able to participate. Are they going to be busy with other pressing matters around the election time? Wink. So it's very fascinating little conditions, but, you know, like I said, just keep remembering. The mass of people in the United States of America do not elect the president. So this next campaign speech, promo, pledge, the title here is interesting to inform people of an answer relative to what its pledge is about, which might surprise some. Well, likely most everyone, using the term anyone versus anybody. And I learned a little bit about this a long time back, and I started paying attention to it. And you're not going to get much response except for you to understand better. You won't get the response from the system that doesn't care because they only look at bodies as in organizations. But anyone versus anybody. Trump again raises no taxes for anyone in latest pitch to woo economic support. Plotting and strategizing for the next Congress has been going on for several months, Republican congressional aides say. Former President Donald Trump has again suggested his wildest tax reform plan, fully removing federal income taxes and saying that the lost revenue can be replaced by funds received from tariffs. Appearing at a barbershop in the Bronx on Monday in a segment broadcast by Lamestream News, Trump was asked when the country could end all federal taxes. The former president suggested returning to the policies of the 1800s. So let's, all federal taxes aside, let's look at the tax liability prior to 1913, which is where he's talking. But first, let's clear the air about Trump cannot do anything too directly to change existing tax law. So let's be careful. Again, this is what a pledge, a campaign pledge, is not actionable. You can't hold them to it. So this is what they come up with. Everybody does it. All politicians do this. But just remember for yourself that he can't do a thing here. Remember, he's just the executive. He doesn't make the laws. He can persuade the body to make the laws. They could sweep, the Republicans could sweep the houses. Not clean. Clearly, it's going to be as corrupt as it was before. But they could sweep the house, the bicameral system, and they could then move on an agenda. But he can't do it by himself. But Trump's opposition, to the contrary, he is not yet a dictator either, notwithstanding some people who might think so. And contrary to the assertion on the article that it would not be the wildest tax reform plan that Trump could do to affect his tax collection reforms in relative to anyone but anybody. Again, a body being a legal entity. So keep track of what he says in the title, what they say in the title. He used anyone. Yet it's the body, an organization that is a legal entity that's subject to tax. Anyone being we the people, the beneficiaries of the Constitutional Republic, is what anyone would be. People. So, again, the presumption is everyone's a body, an organization. So we got to keep a little track of this one. So how can Trump reconcile his claim to those attending his rallies by the extension other than American people, when Congress makes those tax laws? Well, the president is duty-bound to faithfully execute those laws. He can't go outside of them. And pursuant to tax law, what he executes, kills off, is the extension of the law beyond the corporate tax it is intended for, eliminating receipts of tax liabilities statements and then tax filings and collection from people whom have been fraudulently mischaracterized having any corporate character or subject to tax. What I'm saying is he could do this instead of saying he can change the tax law. He can force the IRS to look only at what that is supposed to do and not extend beyond. And then, once they've identified that, then they look to all upon all sources derived, which is what they focus on. And there's a reason for that. But they've got you presumed to be a body instead of a one. So then they go to the all sources derived. Well, the sources they're talking about is that fiat system. And then Trump could say, the law is going to be enforced strictly to whom the entities were that were subject to the tax. Then you go to the sources. And you're going to stop fraudulently collecting tax, contrary to that intended purpose that the 1909 tax law limited it to legal entities, which a subsequent Supreme Court case determined, I think it was around 1913, and I don't remember now the actual date of the case. Find it. You can find it. The old tax protesters likely know it by heart, but that's kind of fallen from my memory. But that tax law case said that the tax law did not extend against its original purpose applicable solely to corporations or what they call legal entities, which you'll see as a list. Individuals, partnerships, associations, corporations, those are all of the lists of what a legal entity is that's subject to regulation, actually. Again, go back and remember that the people were supposed to be sovereign unless they made decisions to bring themselves into some type of a servitude. And for the most part, as an ignorant people, we did. We did all that. So, again, Trump could come back and, as an executive, require that the law be executed exactly and faithfully to the original intended purpose. There's not going to be a presumption here either. There couldn't be a presumption that every body, including the people, liable to tax to apply all those sources derived until such the entity is lawfully found, such as through a court of law providing lawful due process. And that would be no different than getting a lawful warrant required prior to protect against wrongful government encroachment in this regard. So this would encumber the agency, the IRS, the agencies terribly to do more lawful processes. And everybody would have the opportunity to either find out or not be attacked as to the status that they have or the imposition of the wrongful presumption. Trump could do all of this in the lawful execution of the existing law without changing law. So remember, in a limited form government as ours, an agency can't determine in-house disposal of the property of someone it claims subject matter jurisdiction over without judicial oversight pursuant to that recent Supreme Court case, the SEC case that I reported on and told you how important that was going to be. And how I extended that over to the mining law and the IBLA, and they have an in-house set of hearings officers that takes property from miners. And it's so totally illegal. So Trump could execute the fraud of the illegal collection that they do and kill it dead. Execution there. Kill it dead. Stopping an agency mischaracterizing people as a federal or municipal property subject to the jurisdiction of the United States and subject to tax. That exaction of every kind and to no other that you read in 42 U.S.C. 1981 equally applied wrongly to people. Remember, these are about statuses. So Trump could execute the misapplication of the executive enforcement, breaching the peace, the welfare and security and safety of the beneficiaries of the organic establishment that they has enjoyed in the 1880s that Trump refers to, that was all prior to the Fed and the corruption of the tax law thereafter that. That's in part how Trump could execute, kill the enforcement. To faithfully execute the law that has irreparably harmed the American people. Again, your beneficiaries. There's court cases that will say the people are sovereigns. How are we sovereign when we're always subject to this clubbing? Is a status that we don't throw off, a presumption that a wrongful execution of law that even now the judiciary won't necessarily listen for, and it takes decades to get there. Trump could actually do this. I'm not saying he's going to. I'm not saying he even understands it fully. I don't even know what there is fully to understand. I do know that we have certain lines that aren't supposed to be crossed that have just been obliterated, and the knowledge of that seems to be obliterated as well. Someone like myself has a vague view of what we do because we go read the laws of what it's supposed to apply to. whether or not the judiciary has ever wanted to decide that. You'll find some of the cases that explain it. But we live like that in that new time, and it's not a good time. And there, so we have the independence of the judiciary actually working in breach. So the executive agency was never supposed to interfere with the judicial duty-bound judiciary that was duty-bound to stop being the trustee for that purpose. So the trustee, as we saw in the long time ago, I talked about this, I went to the Virginia Constitution, and there it was. You see three levels of the or their organic organization, and number two, I think it's Article 2 in Virginia, it shows you that their judges are trustees to the people. This is before corporation. So you start keeping track of these things over time, you start to make a better picture for us. Well, Trump could make the trust breach to y'all known so that there's no subsequent administration that could reverse what he does, as you can see. When the executive does something, they can have it undone subsequently. But if he makes it known that this is a breach, that this is a violation, that this is not the proper interpretation, then the subsequent administration could not reverse the felonious execution of law under color of authority. And people would then know. No more than what I'm suggesting, and that you would find out for yourself if you go read this stuff. So this is beyond arguing within the rules. See, this is what I'm getting at as well. And then addressing another suggestion by Trump, that of returning to the policies of the 1800s, he said, quote, it had all tariffs at that time. It didn't have an income tax, Trump said. Now we have income taxes, and we have people that are dying. They are paying tax, and they don't have the money to pay the tax. There is a way, if what I'm planning comes out, Trump said about removing federal income tax, he says there's a way to do it. But whether tariffs could remove the need for taxes by a legal entity or corporations is yet to be realized, even by Trump, because that's the way the law is written. However, Trump doesn't need tariffs to free men and women from income tax. And remember, the term income is defined in state law for purposes of general tax, if my listener is interested in refining for you, where you live, what state you are in, what income is further. But don't let your blood pressure rise too far when you find out what it is and it isn't what you've been told. And that definition has to be found to be contrary to the federal tax law. And currently, none of them have that state definition. And they're all valid, and they're limiting. And you look very carefully at what it says there. Trump also tells a little fib here, though, by omission, when he has in his statement, because they don't have the money to pay the tax. That's correct. But the way he's leading on, today there is no money at all. What the people use functions as money, but is not money. Nobody has money to pay. So he tells the truth, but fibs by omission to withhold saying that whatever it is people do have is not money. And then Trump does not disclose that what people do have that they use is debt instruments, which won't pay, can't pay off a debt anyway. That's the thing you're being taxed on, that a privilege of using an instrument they can't pay to make it look like it's paid. And that's how they service this, is in part. Now, it's gone kind of nuts, but for us, we just keep nice and tight to this tax law and look at what it really says and look what the executive can do to right the ship, if you will, and not extend the trespass upon the beneficiaries of the government that it was set up by the government that was set up for their to serve them in their sovereignty. And we don't put too big a sparkler on this word sovereignty, but we do know that means that you're not subject like we are relative to the imposition of an administrative execution. So the apparent source of the government privilege, as I said, for the purpose of the tax, is these debt instruments. Anything you deal with in there, you'll see it has some scrutiny for taxation built into it. So what's a president to do? Well, come clean and wholesome with we the people. Trump could undo what the past presidents did, reinstitute a gold and silver standards. The standard silver one went away back in Lincoln's time, because that's going to be probably the only thing you can actually do as a people, but we have so little left to us. And he can go so far as declaring, this is what I said last week, the Lord of Hosts' possession, stated at the Haggai 2.8, that I referred to at BTW 600. So if those of you not listening don't know when the last episode was. It was BTW 600. Near the very end, I read Haggai. Go read it. The money for man, we the people, is what you're looking at in the Lord of Hosts, silver and gold. It's a part away from the fictitious fiat of man. So that's essentially God's money is man's money, we the people, not corporate. And it can't be declared as a source derived, which can be taxed. Now, what they've done is adulteration. They say they can tax gold. That's a tax on property. That's a direct tax. That's all supposed to be criminal. And they've attached someone, labor, had to come pull that out. That's what the mining law is all about. You're trading life to pull out a property that essentially you move that along for value. That's what it's reflecting. You don't see that when the price of gold is $2,700 an ounce, but that's, you're seeing the value, what it takes to get out and get out into the market. So, and this is supposed to be a part. As I've told you, the Fed cannot take gold as a debt side instrument on its ledger. It has to take it as an asset. So all these little things are there if we just keep paying attention. So Trump could do something. I don't know if he will, but he's promoting that he will. And I'm telling you all so that you have a bit, hopefully, if I haven't insulted you that you already knew or that you knew more, know more than me, but hopefully a lot more people that don't know some of this can go do the research. You become informed and then you watch. And when they start to do this stuff, you make sure you get close to it so you can guide the cart, if you will, the little gold cart coming out back to us. And you guide it in the proper way. Don't let them adulterate that. This is some of the things I'm seeing about the state laws about bringing gold and silver back. And it's a fight to get it back in for some reason. I would have thought that they would have brought it in, but it's still a fight. I think Missouri has that problem. They've got this bill right up through it, right up into getting it allowed. And the Speaker of their House, and I think it was a Republican, it was Republicans that were advancing it, he nixed it in the last moment, if my understanding of that was right. So this is not necessarily so easy, but you got to be there to push it along and in the proper way. And I think he can do some stuff. Trump could do some stuff. At least he's put it out there. Pledges are not actionable, but we can say, well, what about this? And this is how you're going to do it. And it sounds like he's trying to get some people up around him, whether we want to agree that they're good or not. He's getting some people around him that he's going to help guide. And I think, I'm hoping, the word that he says he's going to come back with a vengeance, if you will, to really clean the place out this time. We know the promise. But that's all we got, don't we? I mean, otherwise he's just another scum, another swamp creature himself eventually. You know, trust the plan. I'm not considering trusting the plan. I'm saying, let's get educated. This may be the first and last opportunity we the people have. Get the story straight. Get it publicized so that everyone knows what the story is and start afresh. Even though it'll be painful for a while. Every time they move this thing through, it gets painful. It doesn't mean you get rid of inflation or depressions. What you do is you stabilize your money. And you can work around that a lot better. And everyone knows where it's at, and it's not, there's nothing that the government can do. It's separate. Your activities are separate from what the government does. And that cleans things up a lot. And at that point, you don't need the agencies that you have to monitor everything, because not everybody's presumed to be a body, anybody. People are anyone. Any one of you is a people. Bodies, in law, are legal entities. They're organized. They have organs like you have organs. They are, but they're born, and you're born, but they're born in paper, and you are not. Debt instruments are born in paper. They are not gold. So there's a lot of information for us to glean, to understand the chasm that should have not been breached, that the government breached a long time ago, that Trump could, as an executive now, not changing law, taking existing law, requiring the agencies to follow faithfully that law, and then give all the due process that's required relative to people. And these taxes would likely go away a lot. In particular, he's only talking the income tax, but there's some others that may do the same thing. Now, on this leading, continuing with Trump and dollars, and these fiat dollars, value during this campaign thing that was building up into this election, the story here, I wasn't too interested in this next report, but I'll tell you where it did interest me as we read through it. Trump loses $1.3 billion in 48 hours as tech meme stock plunges. Trading of Trump Media has halted Thursday after falling by nearly a quarter of its market valuation and shaving an estimated $1.3 billion off the former president's net worth within days. Trump, who owns roughly 57% of the company's stock, briefly saw his fortune surge past $8 billion early in the week. NASDAQ trading of Trump Media and Technology Group, which owns Trump's social media app Truth Social, halted twice Thursday morning after the plunging shortly after the start of the trading day. Thursday was not the first time in the week that the trades in the Trump stocks were throttled. On Tuesday, NASDAQ halted trading five times, a series of rapid surges and drops. Citing the fact that Truth Social remains largely a niche social media platform with annual revenues in the millions of dollars, analysts have characterized Trump Media as a meme stock, a stock which gains or loses value not based on a company's so-called market fundamentals, but its viral popularity. And as I said, I wasn't interested in all that until I read this. Wall Street was taught a lesson about the power of meme stocks in early 2021 when hedge funds' plans to short sell stocks of ailing U.S. video game retailer GameStop were temporarily hijacked by Reddit's Wall Street Bets, ballooning the company's valuation and prompting brokerages to step in to block the average Joe from buying GameStop. The perceived manipulation of the market sparked a series of class action lawsuits as well as a congressional hearing. Now, I took interest in the GameStop event because it showed what an asymmetric organized intention taking concerted action can do. The response of the brokerages is the very definition of Wall Street versus Main Street here, and exposing to all the average Joes invested in this Wall Street scam that they can place a bet as long as it is going through their gatekeepers. And at that point, the entire Wall Street scam is a meme stock then, isn't it? Instead of, it isn't Reddit, Wall Street Bets running the board, it's the banker board controlling the perception manipulation of the investments that we the people make into it. Even the response sparking a series of class action lawsuits and a congressional hearing was based on perception. It's all perceived manipulation. Nothing is proven. Getting back to your status, if an agency was required to prove your subject status as a body, a legal entity, they'd have a hard time doing that, wouldn't they? When it, not anybody gets a subject, but any, not anyone is subject, but only bodies are subject. And it's not an inconsequential observation. When you do enough reading, you may think it's nuts. I mean, you may think it's ludicrous or, I don't know what the word would be here. It's not valid. Just go read enough and you start to watch for this. Watch for these the definitions. Watch for your statutory code. Watch how they confine what they're talking about. And you'll start to make more heads or tails. It's like being able to read what's a tax, not income tax, property tax. Property tax in the state that I've been reading in the property law is only taxable property is those with the holdings less than fee simple. If you don't know what fee simple is, what do I talk about with patents, then you don't understand there's a limitation of tax law that doesn't extend to the disposed land. And you just think it's taxable because they changed the name of it. So this is the kind of reading you have to do to start understanding a bit of this, and you start having to read, define as you read. What are they really talking about? What is this phrase, less than fee simple? Well, it's someone who doesn't have a patent. If someone doesn't have fee simple holding of a possession. There's some kind of a conflicted interest somewhere, or a lesser than full interest. And so that you have to redefine that. So if I say that the property tax is limited to properties held less than fee simple, and you don't know that not all property is held less than fee simple, then you're going to get stuck. Pretty simple. That's how they've done this too, it seems. That's where I started to see how they started to do this. So we have this perception, nothing proven, makes a big hullabaloo about what's going on. But you see, the lesson part of here is when this street gets wise, the club comes out to beat them down like baby seals. What was it George Collins said? It's a big club and you ain't in it. You know, the club casino always wins. Well, unless you don't even enter. And you can bet on this next little correlation relative to these issues that we see from someone who could who should know and could know, being 32 years in this, the economic war against us, remembering political economics as war, and continuing those thoughts in your head. Look around the world if you don't think so. Ex-IMF's executive director for Russia insults against Russia, its leadership at IMF board's meetings. Vulgarities and insults against the Russia and the country's leadership have become more common at the meetings of the International Monetary Fund's executive board. Former IMF executive director for Russia, Alexei Mosin, told Sputnik on Friday, shortly before resigning, quote, "I am insulted at the boards. The members are insulting my country, its president. I have to hit back. But all this is deeply disgusting," Mosin said in the interview. This situation is the reason why he submitted his resignation from the IMF and asked for a replacement. The former executive added, quote, "I'm leaving with a great joy because to see what is happening here now is deeply distasteful to me," Mosin said, adding that he was very happy to return to Russia after 32 years at the IMF. Quote, "I am leaving the fund when it is in the worst shape it has been in over three decades of my service here. All this is a result of politicization," Mosin said in an interview. "The IMF has always been politicized," he added, "because the fund's executive board is made up of representatives of political leadership of member countries." Quote, "But the degree of politicization has varied greatly during my tenure here. Now, at the time of my resignation, it has reached an extreme level," Mosin also said. "And you, my listener, are not in that big club either, I wager. This casino they play." And this next thing is a sort of an October surprise, though. Is Bezos anticipating what side his bread will be buttered on real soon as the techno swamp creatures begin their game-changing migration? Bezos explains why Weibo dropped presidential endorsements. There's a lot I would think to say about all these things, but I'm not interjecting a whole lot. But never understood why papers gave endorsements. It all of a sudden popped up and became the thing they did. That this is going away on one level for me, I'm glad to see that they're getting rid of this. However, he's doing it for other reasons. And this is what's interesting in the migration of what's going on between, in the interim of not knowing who's next, the next player in the big casino is going to be, who the leader of the big casino is going to be. Bezos explains it. He says backing specific candidates reinforces a sense of bias in the media, the newspaper owner has claimed. The Washington Post has abandoned its decades-long tradition of endorsing a U.S. presidential candidate to earn back the trust of the American public, the newspaper's owner Jeff Bezos said. The billionaire explained his reasoning in an op-ed published in the Post on a Monday after facing a backlash from current and former staff. The newspaper had endorsed candidates since 1976, but announced the suspension of the practice on Friday, prompting several editors to resign. Bezos began his op-ed by citing a recent Gallup poll, which found that nearly 70% of Americans have little or no trust in the media. Our profession is now the least trusted of all. Something we are doing is clearly not working, the entrepreneur wrote, adding that the most people believe the media is biased. Presidential endorsements do nothing to tip the scales of an election, he continued. What presidential endorsements actually do is create a perception of bias, a perception of non-independence. Ending them is a principled decision, and it's the right one. A total of 21 of the Post opinions columnists signed a statement describing the non-endorsement as a terrible mistake. They argued that this isn't the right moment for one candidate is advocating positions that directly threaten freedom of the press and the values of the Constitution. Three of the newspaper's 10-person editorial board have since stepped down. More than 200,000 people, or about 8% of the Post's paid subscribers, had canceled their digital subscription by midday on Monday, according to NPR. So that the editors and the staff had problems with this principled decision shows they were biased. They were not providing unbiased reporting. And 200,000 subscribers disapproved no longer being lied to, from what I can see here. Last month, Los Angeles Times owner Patrick Soon-Shiong announced that the newspaper would not be making presidential endorsements. The move faced a similar backlash, with editorial editor Mariel Garza resigning in protest. But principled as this is, my problem with this is, one, less an indicator to tell the bias of the Washington Post, as it learns here, indeed, as all mainstream media is learning to hide its bias, more importantly, hide that it is a tool of the deep state, or the they, fortified to run that mind control operation of cognitive warfare by the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2013, which started out as the United States Information and Education Exchange Act of 1948. If and you didn't think that when the United States government says education, it means information warfare to control the minds of whomever will listen without discernment or with inadequate knowledge or foundation. Very interesting positions being moved around. Again, the migration of the techno-slump. Speaking here of apparently late October game changers, is this a sign of the end of the unipolar hegemony dominance that once dismissed sandal-wearing tribal people, unable to wrest control of the Red Sea from the Houthis, the U.S. and U.K. launched fresh strikes on key Yemeni port. Thursday's attack, followed by two airstrikes by the coalition targeting the port city's airport last Wednesday, with those attacks coming shortly after the Houthis announced that they would have launched a hypersonic ballistic missile known as the Palestine 2 at the Israeli military base near Tel Aviv. This week's U.S.-U.K. strikes came after the Houthis showed off a new submersible naval drone known as the Al-Qar'iyya, the Great Calamity, and launched another drone attack targeting the industrial zone of the Israeli city of Ashkelon. Nearly a year after the Houthis kicked off their campaign of ship seizures, missiles, and drone attack designed to deny Israel and its allies access to the Red Sea in solidarity with Gaza, and almost 10 months after the Washington Post announced its Operation Prosperity Guardian naval campaign to degrade Houthi capabilities and halt the attacks, the militia remains unbowed, engaging in progressively more sophisticated and coordinated attacks using increasingly advanced weaponry. Houthi drones and missiles managed to traverse the 2,000-kilometer distance from militia-controlled territory into Israel. Last week, a U.S. military journal revealed that the Houthis nearly struck an American warships in the Red Sea on two separate occasions over the past year, with an incident in June seeing a militia projectile approach within 200 meters of the USS Eisenhower supercarrier. This week, Germany's defense minister reportedly ordered a pair of Deutsche Marine warships deployed in Asia to avoid the Red Sea during their long journey back to Europe, and the vessels instead expected to travel around the Cape of Good Hope and up the western coast of Africa, thanks to the difficult security situation in areas where the Houthis operate. The U.S. alone has reportedly spent over $2.5 billion to date on the anti-Houthi deployments, about a tenth of the estimated $22.76 billion it has committed to the Middle East crisis this year that it foments. Understand. Now, this late-breaking story may not be an October surprise, even fashionably late, but this next news is very important, especially in light of the failed attack on Iran by the F-35s that it thwarted, by the existence of an unknown defense radar that locked on to the promoted state-of-the-art problem child stealth fighters, and by some reports, the appearance of five Russian fighters in backup over Iran, possibly Russia's state-of-the-art fighters, the Su-57. Couldn't find any further communications for that to verify it, but I've seen that from two different people. They're looking at two different sources, so I'm just going to run with that. This failed Israeli attempt to attack Iran may have provided a real-world test for the Iranian-Russian cooperation preceding the strategic, potentially a checkmate here on U.S.-Israel-is-us Middle East invasion of neighboring countries, with the new Russian Iran deal to focus on defense issues. This came out from Lavrov, out of Russia. An updated partnership agreement between Russia and Iran is set to be signed soon, with a particular focus on defense matters, Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov announced on Thursday. Quote, a major factor in strengthening Russian and Iranian relations will be the Treaty of Comprehensive Strategic Partnership between Russia and Iran that is being prepared for signing soon. It will confirm the parties' desire for closer cooperation in the field of defense and of interaction in the interests of peace and security at the regional and global level, Lavrov told the Second Minsk International Conference on Eurasian Security. Israel is finding out that they are losing on all fronts, and its days appear to be numbered. When you talked about this over many broadcasts, when you look at all the different things that are going wrong in Israel, everywhere you look, they're really, notwithstanding the mainstream media hype, they're really not doing well at all. This agreement may strategically be the reason why as well. It may also signal that Russia is not going to be so laid back in the future about who gets its more advanced defense weapon systems, which Iran, the Persian people, and I say that with some distinction, may be no backwards slouch as promoted by the mainstream media either, as we start listening very carefully. And I wondered about their missiles. They seem to be fairly formidable in what they can do. And this new unknown radar, the new unknown radar that locked onto a F-35, was a surprise. And I just saw, relative to the Iranian missiles, I just saw a video from Israel capturing the missiles that were sent by Iran in their lawful retaliation of that Zionist regime's lawless attacks on Iran and attacking their own defense minister and things. The Israeli defenses were absolutely no match and completely overwhelmed by what was coming in from the skies. I've never seen such a thing in all my life. All of a sudden, just light shows up in the sky. Dozens of lights show up, and they are just flat moving. And there's nothing on the ground that could come up and meet them. So there's a very big message going on right now. This Iran-Russian deal is not to be underestimated. When Iran says the Zionist regime made a big mistake in attacking Iran, I can see why in that video, what was coming in on them. And so I'm just, again, as a witness watching from the world, what is being created by Russia and Iran and the axis of resistance is very formidable at this point. That unknown air defense system that can lock onto an F-35 acquired by neighbors of the illegally occupying Zionist Federation movement operating under color of a Jewish state would likely create a no-fly zone relative to Israel's rogue invasions and indiscriminate attacks in the Middle East, given Israel's calling off their attack there after the first wave. The second and third didn't even get off the ground. They realized this so quickly. It was so unknown and so considerable that they decided not to launch the other three waves that was going to attack Iran, because of the threat to the F-35s. And they targeted them outside of Iran airspace, completely foiling what Netanyahu had said they were going to do. And I'm sure that the Iranian capability was an October surprise to the Zionists and the U.S. government. Whatever this effect on the voting public might be, given that an October surprise was election-related, this agreement and the first world military capability of Iran and Russia in strategic alliance may be a real turning point here. What the psychopath ISIS are going to do with this will be anyone's guess. Is the Samson option on your short list too? No, not the Samsung option, like more exploding phones. The option of a trapped human animal trapped by his own criminal self-centered stupidity to lash out. The Samson option. The theoretical Israel nuclear second strike capability in event of a cataclysmic military destruction to their country. But does Israel get those nukes to deliver a killing blow in Iran when the first wave dared not go closer than 70 kilometers from Iran's border in the latest failed Israeli raid attempt? Do we finally have a mutual deterrence in the Middle East now? If so, as in the West failed attempt in Ukraine, the meat grinder will go on for Israel as Hezbollah incrementally increases its resistance and Zionista military and military infrastructure and destruction is contrary to the Israel's psychological warfare lies and claims that if you look closely what's going on as well, the pressure is now mounting. This would be a very interesting and very profound style of attack that was started on October 7th. The Iranian defenses, whether homegrown or in alliance on this failed Israeli attack, that Israel said Iran would pay that dearly for, that the world would see Israel's power and through, and then failing so terribly on any adequate expectation, is, I think, a very big deal, despite the silence about it in most of the mainstream media sources, and Netanyahu calling it a success. It's not a success at all, what happened there. So I'm a little bit encouraged. I'm not here to see the war. I want to see the peace. I think we're also hearing the Russia, Lavrov stating the Russia-Iranian reason to get together is for peace and mutual security. I think they have the upper hand on this. The warmongers do not have the upper hand here. They don't have the intelligence, it seems, to be more than warmongers. The geopolitical game is being very well played today by the so-called Global South and the BRICS and this and that and the other. As I've told you, though, it's a setup for the takedown. Let's not get too wrapped up in that. Just watch how it unfolds and anticipate. And you can see how they're doing it there. Then at home, we understand, as I said, I broke in the broadcast, let's go ahead and get the gold and silver going. It's going to be separate from all of that corruption. Everything in the world, of the world, is nothing compared to what you do in the world to distance yourself from it. And you have that choice to do. That's the interesting part of this. That is the Achilles heel for any of these systems, is use having that final choice to either buy in or not. And you just don't be a contrarian to say no. You got to have more than that. So what I mentioned here, if Russia finally steps up to send, if it is Russian air defense systems, and even now if it's even Iranian Russian defense system, it's more of the neighbors get this defense system that can reach out and touch an F-35, supposedly the most advanced fighter that at least America has. That would create that no-fly zone that Israel is exploiting, that without it, we go bomb indiscriminately everywhere in the Middle East, causing those values to the United States taxpayer to go up. But from no-fly here, we're going to move to When Pigs Fly Flu 2.0, the planned reemergence targeting family reforms, as I was reading this next report, which comes all the way from New York. You'd think they'd get a little closer to the story, but this thing must be that contagious, right? To report from New York on something that's happening in Oregon. Be afeared, folks. Be very afeared. Bird flu has been found in a pig for the first time in the U.S. A pig at an Oregon farm was found to have bird flu, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced Wednesday. It's the first time the virus has been detected in the U.S. swine and raises concerns about the bird flu's potential to become a human threat. So look at the two hesitations. A concern about a potential. But a pig has got to sneeze. Pigs can be infected by multiple types of flu, and the animals can play a role in making bird viruses better adapted to humans, she explained. The 2009 H1N1 flu pandemic had swine origins, Nuzo noted. You going way back to then, folks? Remember what I was saying way back then about all this? It isn't necessarily surprising that a pig infection was detected, given that so many other animals have had the virus, experts say. So, if it is a natural, this is ubiquitous. It's endemic in farm animals. Remember the language here. Let's go back to Covey Swindle. Go back and just use that language right here. It's ubiquitous. It's the flu. Nothing to see here, actually. And that's not a joke. Nothing to see here. It's the flu. Pigs get colds. I guess they get sneezes. So if this is natural and ubiquitous, what's the concern? Then more than it would be a seasonal flu for a pig. But if this is novel, it would have had to have been planted at the farm. You follow me on this, folks? Really? Think about this. If this is novel, it's just a protein string. It has to be carried. As I told you, the jabs were the doctor and the jab was the infectious agent that used to be in a WHO definition of how they determined a region in a pandemic. I've told you about that as well. All that is playing here in these stories as I go through, at least in my mind. I hope you remember some of this, and if you don't, maybe you do some more research, and so that you'll see that, in a way, we can make up some stuff, but we don't have to make this one up. They're telling us exactly what's going on if we know the code language within it. The infection happened at a backyard farm in Crook County in the center of the state where the different animals share water and are housed together. Let me just stop there. The infection happened at a backyard farm. Doesn't eliminate natural or novel. It doesn't eliminate it being brought in on purpose. Last week, poultry at the farm were found to have the virus, and the testing this week found that one of the five pigs of the farm had become infected. The farm was put under quarantine, and all five pigs were euthanized so additional testing could be done. It's not a commercial farm, they go to tell us. And USDA agricultural officials said that there is no concern about the safety of the nation's pork supply. But finding bird flu in a pig raises worries that the virus may be hitting a stepping stone to becoming a bigger threat to people, said Jennifer Nuzzo, a Brown University pandemic researcher. Now remember what pandemic is. It's international. WHO definition, not the rock group, not the owl, not the little people from Whovio, but the World Health Organization invented that term. And it's impossible in communicable disease law. But the definition of how it gets into different countries could be a doctor who is a DNA-containing vessel who injects someone else with a DNA substance. That was the definition. It didn't read that way until you understand the code language. But here we are. We have to be afeard of. This is what it is right here in the articles. So far this year, nearly 40 human cases have been reported in California, Colorado, Washington, Michigan, Texas, and Missouri, with mostly mild symptoms, including eye redness, reported. All but one of these people had been in contact with the infected animals. The USDA has conducted genetic tests on the farm's poultry. It has not seen any mutations that suggest the virus is gaining an increased ability to spread to people. That indicates the current risk to the public remains low, the official said. A different strain of the bird flu virus has been reported in pigs outside the U.S. in the past, and it did not trigger a human pandemic. Be afeared, folks. Quote, it isn't one-to-one relationship where pigs get infected with viruses and then they make pandemics, said Troy Sutton, a Penn State researcher who studies flu viruses in animals. This version of the bird flu, known as type AH5N1, has been spreading widely in the United States among wild birds, poultry, cows, and a number of other animals. Well, stop me when you haven't heard this before. H5N1. But did the pig really have the bird flu? A lot of the problems here we know when we read this, that the PCR test, so-called test, causes. We really don't know. They are testing again, to be certain for sure. Why? That's after they killed these animals, too. Understand how this works for the small farmer. We don't know if it's real. They're testing again the one that came up. So why does it make the news, raising an alarm before they know for sure? And then we have the question, is it novel or natural? And I'm going to make a little bit of an analysis relative to that. When you understand what I was saying about the PCR, what it tests for and what it can't test for, we can always predict what's going to happen here, what this thing is. So prior reports over a decade ago say it's novel. Again, we've got to go back a decade to remember this. Novels lab made. And again, Colby Swindle, most recent discussion I've had on and on and on about this, is explaining this distinction and how you can go figure this out. And wasn't there a patent for the SARS-CoV-2 and by the CDC? And it was novel. Because we want to look at that, but we want to look at something about this new H5N1. And I went to a state website just to see what they're talking about, funneling in on, going in on this novel, this term novel, what they're saying now about it. And the state that I picked was Minnesota, is very clear on the origins. So let's go to the Minnesota Health website to find out whether when the pig's fly flu is natural or novel, lab-made, technician designed, and constructed. When we read, right from their website, novel avian influenza A. A new, novel avian influenza A virus have the potential to cause a pandemic if the virus were to change to become easily and sustainably spread from person to person. Big if here, right? They already agreed that it doesn't happen. The worst you're going to get is some red eyes. At any rate, let's keep going. So we look in this deception, they define new as novel. It's further refined to be new to humans is what new is. But if they were merely new, if this was just merely new as an infection, the CDC could not have patented on the SARS-CoV-2 protein or the other novel bioweapons fraudulently characterized as a virus that are being found, if these were natural, being natural things, even those new to humans are prohibited to be patented under patent law. So more importantly on this, pursuant to local communicable disease law, a vaccine needs to be from a natural source, which could not be the patented either. Being a synthetic, non-natural analog, the substances can be patented. But then they cannot meet the requirements of local communicable disease law for typically an attenuated natural virus which works to stop transmission, but another requirement. So the patented non-natural substance said to be a vaccine but can't be evidences a non-natural lab-made novel infectious agent, which is not a virus. Remember how COVID's run to work. But while these things are new to humans, they might be novel or new, that doesn't preclude these things new to humans being unnatural, particularly when there is a patent on them. But looking more closely at the opening paragraph, the communicable disease law everywhere is interested in transmission of an infectious agent, not that it is sustainably spread. And as I've shown, the novel infectious agent can be sustainably spread through jabs or aerosols, etc., that we heard about. So now think about the population control eugenics origins and the purpose relative to sustainable development, sustainably spread, sustainable development, and why the focus on monitoring sustainable spreading and not natural transmission. Additionally, pandemic, again, is a made-up term by the UN pharma broker, the WHO, not the rock group, the OWL, or the little people from Whoville, the World Health Organization made up this term and cannot be used as it is being used in the Minnesota website. Or they ask the question, what is an influenza pandemic? An influenza pandemic is a global outbreak of a new influenza virus that is very different from the current and recently circulating human seasonal influenza viruses. But remember, pandemic cannot exist in any lawful health jurisdiction, having a territorial limit, such as the county health jurisdictions do, that are required to faithfully exercise their local health law, which is limited to what? Outbreaks, and then larger areas outside of their single jurisdiction of that territory to be inside the state, the next border, called epidemics. So even if a pandemic existed in a so-called global sense, so-called global outbreak, there could not be a pandemic outbreak because any suspected contagion would be past the epidemic stage, locally or interstate, to be recognized in any international sense at all in that regard. A reference to anything pandemic as an extra-jurisdictional overreach and a breach of duty by the local territorial limited official, such as those in Minnesota. So let's read the first paragraph again to see there's a whole lot of lying going on in the Minnesota Department of Health, don't you know? And to hear how, if you read closely and read this, we'll see here how Minnesota Department of Health is already internationally infiltrated and corrupted. When we read, new, in parentheses, novel, avian influenza A viruses have the potential to cause a pandemic if the viruses were to change to become easily, Vince, sustainably spread from person to person. So, novel, H5N1, H5N2, H7N3, H7N9, are novel. I think 9 was the one that that Korean technician was caught with. They're synthetic. Lab-made toxins are not viruses properly or naturally. This is right on the top of their list. The first paragraph tells us all this stuff. So how, again, were these novelties sustainably spread to the farm that was non-commercial? Maybe by the inspector? They found this in bees, the inspectors in bees. They were spreading the contagions, whatever they were. In this case, they were organisms that you can find and test for. They're live. You can find them. So who is doing the sustainable spreading but the sustainable change agents, it seems to me. So I used the Minnesota website because it was more forthcoming about using the term novel. That's why I ended up there to start to talk to you about here. So let me refer to the CDC website, which the novel, not natural character of these substances, and show the consistency even as to admitting using the deceptive PCR to find it when they said they'd identified it in the other website. It's all consistent if you know how to parse through this. Unless, as I've explained, the PCR cannot be used in the wild. It can be used to find a lab-made protein sequence using a limited number of cycles. Remember that as well. That's said to be, by the inventor himself, Kerry Mullis, to be 25 cycles, not the 35 the CDC was using after the jabs were delivered at warp speed. Also, that the PCR is a lab technique. It's not a test. And it's not remotely reliable in the wild as it's being used. So let's read from the CDC study in the link you get to the blogcaster to see that its interest is in tracking only the novel lab-made substance using the PCR. National surveillance activities. You'll scroll down that link to find the national surveillance activities. CDC's influenza surveillance systems collect information to track trends in influenza activity and detect changes in circulating influenza viruses, including, in other words, limited to, this is legal writing, including, and they list the detection of novel influenza A viruses year-round. Human cases of novel influenza A virus infection have been nationally notifiable since 2007. Every identified case is investigated and reported to the CDC. Investigation and findings. Identification of two human cases of an influenza AH5 virus infection. On April 1st, April Fools, 2024, the Texas State Department of Health Services reported, and after confirmation by CDC, that a commercial dairy farm worker tested positive for by real-time reverse transcription polymerase chain reaction, the RT-PCR, is highly pathogenic avian influenza H5N1 virus infection after exposure to dairy cattle presumed to be infected with AH5N1 viruses. CDC confirmed laboratory's finding through RT-PCR sequencing. So there you have it. Did you catch that? Infection and exposure on a mere presumption. the health departments are abusing the local health law to track something that isn't authorized to be presumed, or that's novel, which health law faithfully complied with, would not be able to be this lab-made material because of the test, now designated only an assay, being used and constituting a banned bioweapon that is likely being sustainably spread unnaturally, anthropomorphically, in the sustainable development model. Any vaccine for which is synthetic, not a natural pathogen, as required as well. The very use of the PCR suggests strongly, if not proves, these are synthetic things. Nothing's natural about it. This is BTWRLM 601. Now, this next notice might curdle your blood a bit. Tens of thousands of rally in Japan against the new self-amplifying COVID vaccine. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets last month to protest the unveiling of yet another mRNA-based COVID vaccine, gathering in the city to march against the biosecurity state, against the WHO, against this new vaccine technology, to protest the government's plan to roll out a self-amplifying mRNA COVID vaccine, which experts have warned lacks long-term safety data. I would say it lacks a natural substance, for sure. From September 2024 to 28, the International Crisis Summit, ICS, formerly the International COVID Summit, convened in the Japanese capital of Tokyo to notify people about the new Replicon, self-amplifying mRNA vaccines that have been scheduled to be introduced in Japan, a country with a significantly aging population, released in this October. Surprise? A Replicon vaccine is a type of vaccine that relies on self-amplifying RNA as its antigenic component. Replicons can trace their origins to viruses like alpha viruses. Strikingly, according to an article by the Exposé, the use of alpha virus-derived RNA technology in vaccines is where the danger lies. Yeah, it's all novel, synthetic. You hear it right there, right? You're getting this. I hope you're hearing the language here. Alpha virus-derived RNA technology in vaccines. The man-made genes. These are just protein strings now, folks. They're telling us exactly what this stuff is. The man-made genes in the Replicon vaccines, if introduced into humans, are likely to spread not only to other humans, but also to other species. The same article continues, the difference between the COVID mRNA vaccine and the COVID sARNA vaccine is that the former, a cell's machinery produces the spike protein for as long as these instructions persist, while the sARNA goes a step further. It integrates the genes needed for the replication and synthesis of spike protein encoding RNA, effectively establishing a biological printing press for fabricating the vaccines inside cells. Unsurprisingly, skeptics have slammed such self-replicating vaccines as the third atomic bomb, according to a report by the Rio Times. Others have warned that due to self-amplifying mRNA shots being so new, they are potentially hazardous. One such expert is epidemiologist Nicholas Holscher, who told The Defender that these products are completely new. There is absolutely no long-term safety data on them. And let me interject. They didn't tell us there was these SAs or not before. They didn't say the specific RNA. They just said we're getting mRNA technology. We now know, it was anticipated behind the woodshed, that they were doing a vast global experiment. And then we find batch after batch that were separate and different and having different outcomes. What do you think? Maybe some of that, these RNA technologies, mRNA technologies, were actually these Replicons to see those batches, how they would work out. So get another jab, folks. Let's go ahead and just right in your arm. That's what Bill Gates wants, right in your arm, right in a little one's arm, right like that. So this is what they're doing. Pharma. A little P, folks. Big H. And the height of a technocrat's ecstasy, the ability to turn you off, freedom of speech, but not free to reach. India's internet shutdowns have reached as far as Delhi as the government tries to crush protests. Now, I want you to read this for the cancer that you be in the society. The government wants to shut you out, and this is your life in the future in the digital gulag. Internet shuts down. They're crushing protests. Now, you have a gripe, and they're going to shut you off. Just turn off your switch. If you haven't gotten your jab, we're going to have to figure something else out. The Indian government shut down internet and messaging services in parts of the capital city of Delhi yesterday. The outage lasted 4 hours and affected the services of ISPs, Vodafone Idea, and Bharti, or Airtel, and Airtel also halting voice calls. The reason for the shutdown was protests against a new citizenship law that was seen to be discriminating against Muslims, despite the police ban on large gatherings, i.e. more than four people. These protests are seemingly organized by students using social media. Vodafone Idea acknowledged the shutdown on Twitter, saying, quote, as per the directive received from the government, data services are stopped at a few locations. So consider your life dependent on the internet, folks. And it's gone. One of your rats says so. And something that can make things gone in a flash, but showing life finds a way. I guess I hope that's the remnant, those of us that make it through, that can be so bold to say so. Massive meteorite impact that caused Earth's oceans to boil helped early life thrive. Can I stop reading right there? Is that a good enough joke? A meteorite that pummeled Earth about 3.26 billion years ago has shed light on a fascinating secrets about our planet's distant past. Heat from the impact of the S2 meteorite that struck Earth billions of years ago caused the topmost layer of the ocean to boil off, a new study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences has discovered. So this asteroid was only able to boil off the topmost layer of the ocean, not the entire ocean. So note to self, an event so big as to dwarf prior events on this planet could not boil off the ocean. Like we're told, anthropomorphism is killing this planet and boiling off the oceans. Okay, good. Let's keep that track. S2 also triggered a tsunami bigger than any in known human history, revealed the team of scientists led by Nadja Drabone, assistant professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Harvard University. Oh, so there was also enough water left to cause tsunamis. Well, good. They studied rock samples retrieved from an impact site in the Barberton Greenstone Belt of South Africa to better understand the consequences of that massive asteroid strike on our planet. S2, first discovered in 2014, is estimated to have been 40 to 60 kilometers wide, with a mass much greater than the space rock linked to the extinction of the dinosaurs 66 million years ago. It is believed that this space rock gouged a 500 kilometer wide crater. Well, the miner in me just speaks up. I want to go look at the edge of that. How cool would that be? So how did it do that? Analysis of the sedimentary geochemistry and carbon isotope composition left behind by the meteorite revealed that the impact of 3.26 billion years ago, also heated up the atmosphere by up to 100 degrees centigrade, while the cloud of dust shut down all photosynthetic activity. Well, 100 degrees centigrade instantaneously. 1.5 degrees centigrade rise in the global temperature by the year 2100 isn't so scary now, is it? Even if it were true. Quote, we know that after the Earth first formed, there was still a lot of debris flying around space that would be smashing into the Earth. Now we have found that life was really resilient in the wake of some of these giant impacts, and that it has actually bloomed and thrived Drabone said in a media statement. So resilience is to be the microbe here, folks, and or as I've referenced in the past, to be the wayfarer. Or as J.J. Jusserand said, all these wayfarers acted the part of microbes infecting the stationary part of the population with ideas of a new age and a larger world. And I say, infect society, folks. So what do we do if this is, if this science sounds like someone mashed up some children's bedtime or dinosaur stories to come up with some wild scientism fairy tales in adults? Anthropomorphic what? Man-made how? Yeah, Michael Mann made up global warming. Because? Well, because climate change is not about the weather. And in the marketplace of ideas, be the microbe, a wayfarer infecting society with the truth to counter the king and the nobles and the prelates and the judges and all the depositories, depositories of public power. Or as it is written in the document that you get a link here, The English Wayfaring Life in the Middle Ages by J.J. Jean-Jules Jusserand. The reasons are manifold, but one of the chief was that the absence of a class of wayfarers as strong, active, and numerous as that of England, the class served to unite all people. By its means, those of the South learnt the ideas of those of the North, which it each suffered and desired, the sufferings and wishes of that were not always identical, but was enough to know that all had reforms to demand. Thus, when the news came that the revolt had begun, the people rose on all sides, and while it was apparent that the desires of each were not absolutely similar, yet the basis of the contention being the same, all wishing for more independence, they went forth together without being otherwise acquainted than by the intermediary of the wayfarers. The kings of England, indeed, had perceived the danger, and on different occasions had promulgated statutes bearing especially on the talk indulged in by the wanderers about the nobles, the prelates and judges, and all the depositaries of public power. So you want to start infecting something, we got to do the infection, folks. Now here's a massive impact that won't boil off the toppermost layer of the oceans, but should boil the blood of the taxman. South Americans state to dissolve tax authority. The Argentine government plans to replace the current agency with a new one and slash jobs by a third. Argentina's government has announced plans to dissolve the country's tax bureau and replace it with a new simplified agency. Staffing will be reduced by just over a third in the process of restructuring, according to the statement released by the government on Monday. The Federal Administration of Public Income will be renamed as the Customs Revenue and Control Agency. Can I interject, please? You hear tariffs right there, don't you? You hear what Malay's doing in Argentina. No, I think he's a systems guy. It doesn't matter. You see what I was saying? They're going to change some laws there, but Trump can do the same just by focusing what the real intent was and keeping the dog, the tax dog, out of the places, the yards that they're not supposed to be. We're watching the same thing down here. So, folks, it is possible. Over 3,000 positions within the dissolved agency will be eliminated in an effort to reduce inefficient structures. Is that telegraphing what Elon Musk is going to do when he brings his technocracy to Mars? First, he's going to work out all the bugs here on Earth and then go. Quote, the step is essential to dismantle the unnecessary bureaucracy that has hindered the economic and commercial freedom of Argentines, the statement reads, highlighting that the new agency will function as a more simplified, more efficient, less costly, and less bureaucratic structure. The Argentina of fiscal voracity is over. But what belongs to every Argentine is theirs and no one else's. No state bureaucrat should be able to have the power to tell them what to do with their property, presidential spokesman Manuel Adorno said, commenting on the restructuring as cited by the Buenos Aires Times. Very exciting statements right there, folks. We could actually see that if Trump is actually serious. I'm not sure what his plan is, but it won't take anybody else but his executive order and then explaining clearly and definitively the extortion and coercion and fraud that the agencies do when they step outside of the tight constraints, the strict constraints of the tax law, which the Supreme Court back in the early 1900s said did the case was against the challenging the 1909. They said that 1909 tax law, which is upon corporations, did not, in the 1913 Act, did not expand the purpose and intent of the 1909 tax law. So this is all within his power to do. We're seeing it in the world. Now, I'm not saying that this ends up going in the right direction. I'm saying we take these opportunities and we make sure that they don't go in the wrong direction. I'm not so sure about Argentina, but we'll see. If you don't understand what I've been telling you about Russia and how they've made their system more simplified, more efficient, less costly, and less bureaucratic, you'll understand what Argentina is doing, even though it doesn't want to be a part of the global South. Consider that, what we're actually seeing here. Pretty fascinating. It can be done, folks. It just has to have the will of the people and a few people in the seats of decision to do so. As I've said before, when we get involved with counties, we have to be informed. As it broke into this broadcast, you have to be informed of have a great foundation when you go in. And you cannot be wrong once when you give the information. You're going to be against the change agents in the form of attorneys. You have to be, it's not like a screaming match. You just got to wait when you offer it to a seated decision, a thing to do or that you want. They'll go to their attorney. The attorney will come back with an answer. They'll tell you that, oh, they can't do it or whatever. Usually they can't do it. And they'll give all these wrong reasons. And you have to calmly and completely, but succinctly, give back the right answer to show how they're wrong, and you can keep moving forward. You have someone that's receptive in a seated decision, then you can move these issues along. Yes, it's kind of tedious, and yes, it's, I call it government goo, but right now it has to go through because we are a public that's ignorant, generally, and then we have leaders that are as ignorant as us, but they, you know, they're popular, they're celebrity, so they feel that they want to do something better, and they get into positions, and they don't understand they're going to be told they can't. They have to follow what their legal advice is. So we have a problem. But you come with foundation. You come with people that, you put people in office that are willing to listen. I'm only leading on by what Trump said in the campaign. You can't sue him for not giving that to you. But now that he's said it, I don't think he's that criminal that you couldn't press with a good plan if he's got no other good plan around him. Or get ready to challenge the one that he does have around him that actually is a subversion. So if we gear up, we actually have time too, real quick, to allow ourselves to get in and look at what Argentina is doing, go look at what Trump said, look at what the law really says, direct Trump to do the right thing. In other words, I guess I'm saying, and I don't know that he would or wouldn't, if there was quite a few people that brought to Trump that he didn't have the authority to do what he did with the COVID, great COVID swindle and at warp speed, that he had to first rely on the non-fraudulent exigency being demonstrated non-fraudulently, then I wonder if they would have backed him off. And that's really all you need to do, just back that off. And that probably wouldn't have happened so quick. This issue about the income tax is, I think, more clearly defined by the law already. You don't even want it changed in some regard. Because if you look at the stories, they're actually wanting to meddle with the law. The Republicans want to meddle with the law. But remember, all these billionaires and millionaires in office take benefit of that very code. It's what y'all will cry about what you should be doing when they talk about credits and tax write-offs and all this other stuff. That's really, they're telling you what you should be doing as well, how you're supposed to set yourself up to do that and to benefit from that kind of corporate taxation. But we cry about it. We don't really look too closely. And then we try to think we can evade, you know, avoid, it ends up being evasion. We think we can evade it, but we can't. And I've been finding out, as I said earlier, that taxation is a status thing, and it's limited, but there's a presumption that everyone is a body. There's nothing but everybody out there that is subject to tax. And then people try to go inside the regulation to say, but I'm not in here. And you can't argue it that way. You have to just show the fraud in the characterization of a status subject. And this is kind of how they do it. In this case, the government of Argentina comes up and says, we're going to change these tax laws. We're going to become efficient, but we don't need this much. People's property will be theirs. We're going to do it a different way, and I'm encouraged to see that they're going to name this out of what actually Trump is talking about. And I'm wondering if maybe they didn't talk a bit about here about this. The use of tariffs is more into line with the customs of the country, the entry into the country. That's what Washington is supposed to do. It's supposed to regulate the foreign stuff coming in. So that's a more proper way to put it. So, and do this. So I'm kind of interested. There's an example down south with a guy I'm not so sure about, but here it is. Again, they refine, they make more things more efficient. If you turn over to Russia, you see what's efficient. Bureaucracy is efficientized. It makes it much more quicker, more efficient, more less costly to the government, and they induce you to enter in. And I think the way they've done it for making income tax upon the people in Russia, I think it's about only 4%. And so you just pay the 4%, and no one wants to fight for that low amount. So they did that part smart if they want to do exactions of every kind in Russia. And then they digitize it. And so it's really efficient now. And then you're on the blockchain. And so now everyone's in it. There's no one's going to be escaping that. And that's part of the hidden danger about this. Once a society gets so beat down, it takes about any relief. It really doesn't care. Even relief that's not good for it. As long as it looks like a relief. And so let's be cautious about that. I was encouraged about this. They're placing this a little bit better. I'm hoping good for the Argentinians there, because they've had such a bad time of it. But we'll see how this works out. We need to kind of be paying attention. So I say, you look out in the world. What are other people doing? The United States is not the good idea anymore. The United States good idea, I think, certainly must have ended around Lincoln's time. People should have had a thought about when silver was nixed. We all talk about gold and stuff, and that's important, but the silver was the local man's money, Main Street's money. I think if I'm told the things I've read, you earned an ounce of silver a day. That was your labor. And that I guess paid everything. You get things that cost nickels instead of dollars. And so, anyway, there's a lot of lessons to be learned about this. And that transition, our lack of use of that, it's going to cause a little bit of hardship. But as I look around, I think that's going to be a lot better thing to work through for 6 months and to come out on the other side free, if you will, less imposed. And again, it's going to be very important. It's not just a thing that Trump does. It's a thing that he explains so that everybody knows, so that when he's gone, it doesn't go back to the Dark Ages. The wayfarers have to come back out, and the kings know that they're a danger. We're in that time, so I do behind the woodshed. I try to give the information to get it spread around, and we get very few people that spread it around. Maybe you don't understand it, maybe you don't quite appreciate it, maybe you're not interested in being free, maybe you're not interested in holding off oppression. I don't know. Maybe that's why we don't get the donations I would have thought we would have got. I'll get off on that a little bit. Not too much. Please donate. Get over to reallibertymedia.com and donate so Sound can get the stuff that he needs. He's come out of pocket a bit for some of the hardware. And I don't understand why when I'm looking, it's kind of amazing. I don't quite understand it fully. I see it, but I'm still stunned by it. He's telling me this last week there was 75,000 views on the syndication that he's making out there. And, you know, we can't get a dime per click. We can't get hardly anything. And I just don't know what the problem is. And so, you have to start giving and supporting where you get the information and where you can get information. And if you want some information more than what I can give or different, I need to know about it. 75,000 clicks and only a few people respond. What kind of a society are we? We're not really looking. I got a couple more people, longtime friends, listeners, and allies here, friends, to work this out. And we're stunned. There's just no follow through. I've come up with crickets. It's not a joke. We're perplexed why people don't engage. We're talking here, one instance, the most recent one, is North Carolina. My first question when I saw that they were going to come in, the big investors were coming in, the government was shutting, that we're going to buy you out and all this other stuff. My first thought was, what's the condition of the mineral rights there? Who has them? Are they split estates? What is it? What do these people have? Why? Because if there's going to be that kind of force, as a property owner, you need to know your property rights and whether or not you have those minerals, because if there is what they're looking at, what we're told in the news, is a lithium mining condition or some expensive, up-and-coming expensive mineral that's needed, some strategic mineral. You need to know that, because if you know you have the mineral rights there, you have those values. The surface values are zero at this point there, and they're going to come and get you for nothing. If you band together and you know you have mineral rights, and you know what they are, and you know that you are what they want, well, if the government's going to come and do a domain, a takings, then they're going to have to pay you for it. They don't have to pay you so much when all they have to pay you for is a surface that's not there no more, the plants that are gone. And so it becomes very important for us to understand that the government will, the public-private partnerships of money and what government does by force can be countered when you know these things, when you know basics, and you assert them. And that's really all I'm about behind a woodshed, learning the lessons. Let's learn where we've been wrong, and let's make it a bit better. And we then bring the guy who's made, guy or gal who thinks they're official, and we put that on them. So the laws are there. We're not getting the accountability for transgressions. That's another part. Trump would be doing that. I'm not selling him. I'm saying that's the kind of people we need in office, wherever they are, that will step up and say, no, this is what's really supposed to get be going on. And it's within my power. I just don't make wild pledges. It's within my power to do this. And you need to know why I'm doing this. In this case of taxation, it appears the government is extending the definition of anybody to anyone. And that's impermissible. That is a violation of the intent purpose. That brings the beneficiaries, the sovereign, we the people, each of us, down into a servitude that was never meant for us. And until we have it in us to say that, until we know to say that, when we do start saying it, we're going to get pushed back. We're going to be the wayfarer that the king's going to be looking at, all his henchmen will be looking for, and the few of us make it easier for them to find us. The many of us now becomes the mass, but not the idiots. The ones that know what they're doing, the ones that take action. And they're and you know that because they are taking action. We're self-supporting in that, in the same way for what Real Liberty Media wants to be and tries to be for people. It would be what we're seeing out in the world with Helene and people just showing up, offering all that they can do, and almost limitless, it seems. And comes the help that everybody needs to start being the example that we need to be for ourselves. I got off way off of that. But anyway, so yeah, let's start learning these foundations. I'm not, again, a Trump guy. I'm not a Kamala guy. None of these folks, these politicians are just I just can't. I don't even want to say it. But they're there, and we're living in a system that utilizes that to a negative to us. And I think it's going to. Well, the only way we're going to be able to get rid of that is to figure out a way to lead the leader to the place he's supposed to, or she's supposed to be, instead of letting the system drive it where they want it to go, sustainably, as we hear now. And I hope you're understanding the reflection. Sustainable, we talk about UN, international. No, it's global. And it's economics. And economics is politics. We heard the Russian IMF guy, 32 years in the business, and he's saying it's all politicized. Money is, economies are politicized. Politics is war. And there we are. And that's what they're doing to us. And so there is an example in the United States of America. It truly is a unique example. And from that spring, some other things that we can notice that are also examples. And if we pull those core examples together and understand their underlying principles, then we become more powerful. And we can be able to say, wait a minute, you don't have that far, that reach that far. you don't have free speech with full reach. Like you've turned around on us that all of a sudden somehow some private partnership can do this while you attack them too to get what you want as a government. And they are being paid by you too in other areas like X, Elon Musk. It's an interesting interplay that goes on. Fancy dance going on. You know, people were not supposed to be in it, and we never stopped. We the people never said no. We never said you can't go that far. Now we're in a position where we need to find the people that could. Trump might be the guy because he just said so. What I'm telling you is that it's not going to be him that removes income tax. There are two paths that I've seen that could remove it, but he can't do one of them. He can make honest the system, expose the dishonesty so it isn't replaced, returned when he's gone. And we might be able to begin, whoever Trump ends up being, we might be able to begin again more free than we certainly are right now, and with a better understanding now than we have and been inculcated by government education to understand for ourselves. What's taken me so long to figure out and understand how the interplay. And again, I wait for the objections. I don't see many, so I'm going to have to play that out with the direction that I've found for myself that gets me along. As I said, I started applying these things and things worked out different. Even to a neutrality where you're not being attacked more, but you're not really getting the remedy. That's still a step there. And a lot of people that take what I say and they apply it for themselves, they find the very same thing. There's at least a neutrality, if not a subtle victory, because the attack is a non-winnable thing. But you can defend yourself. And you don't become the bad example. So that's what we see. Trump may not, he may be being used for good. He's offered something that we can make very important. And it's not about the income tax. It's about the system of fiat that needs to be backed down and put in its place if it's going to exist. It can exist for corporations, but it should never exist for we the people. That should be the gold and silver system. And whatever foibles it has. I mean, that's just something, you have to create that chasm. It's the fact of the commingling of these two ideas that have caused our problems. And we tend to just shrug our shoulders and are apathetic. And as one of the questions is, well, when people hear this, why aren't they picking it up and protecting themselves? And I have no idea. I really don't have the temperature of the people. I really don't. I don't know how to persuade people to do the right thing. I wish I did. Or the righter thing. Or at least do something to find out that, you know, explain that it's not the right thing. We don't have that kind of integration. And that's been our failure. That's what's been going on in this country. So to hear Argentina giving us a little bit of example, what has to happen, where Trump cannot change the income tax law, the legislators have to do that. We see that happening in Argentina. Whether or not it's the right way or not, I'm not saying. I'm saying you see that it can be done. Somebody can come in. They now have persuasion, influence over a total body, a legislative body, and things can happen toward the right way. What the people have to do is reintegrate, be knowledgeable again, and start to make sure that when they do that, they don't make it worse. I'm hesitant about Argentina and for Argentinians, because something more efficient, less costly, and more available to people, instituted by the government, sells no more than a prison. Just opening the door and letting you come in and making that real easy for you. And that example in the world is in Russia. And I hope you see these connections. It's not just, the news out there. If they start doing that here, we have to be able to see it. If they try to do underneath the color of we're reforming no income tax and we're going to do it this other thing, and then you find out there's a different type of tax, and it's put on you more quickly and more pervasively, that's not a direction you want to go. There absolutely has to be a stop to that. So instead of just stopping it, once you have a momentum, you offer the better outcome. You offer the more lawful outcome, the more principled outcome, the more moral outcome. And that will have to exorcise fiat right out of the system for people. You know, I hope people haven't turned away from this. What I'm saying here is very important information. When I say roll up our sleeves, this is the type of work that we need to do. Otherwise, we're looking, those future generations, they're all debt slaves. They're debt slaves now, but they're going to be a debt slave that they can't escape, a system they can't escape. Again, that global system, though, there's no reflection anywhere to remind people. Like these little things I see in the news for us. You speak out, you try to hold to a principle, there's a world out there that's going to come along and it's going to beat you down. And that's why I say you don't not do it because of that. You will be pursued. But you try to spread the seeds that shows people that you're being pursued, and then they see that the problem is, and they choose to become pursued themselves. In the meantime, you got this exponential notice going up, example going up of what has to happen. Otherwise, corruption lays in, and a few at a time get taken down until there's nobody. This is that cancel culture idea. And about those left-leaning policies, such as cancel culture, another blood-curdling tale. Enoch Burke jailed for the third time for breaching court order to stay away from West Meath School that he was sacked from last year. A judge has ordered the teacher of Enoch Burke, who objects to addressing transgender student with the pronoun they, be arrested for alleged contempt of court. Mr. Burke has been showing up each day at Wilson's Hospital School at Multi Farnham County at Westmeath since it opened its doors for a new school term late last month. However, he was arrested by Gardaí, on Monday after a judge ordered that Mr. Burke must appear before the High Court for breaching an injunction to stay away from the school. He has now been committed again to Mountjoy Prison, where he has already spent over 400 days until he purges his contempt. Speaking to the Irish Mirror at the school last week, a defiant Mr. Burke insisted he would continue to turn up there as this is where I work, he says. However, he admitted that he hated his time locked up in Mountjoy Prison. When asked what his time in prison was like, he said, I detest prison. It's horrible. A sad place. It's a terrible place to be behind a door for 18 hours a day. But the issue is, prison is for people who break the law, and in this case, I'm here doing my moral duty. So this is where I should be today. I'm standing up for my rights, for what I believe. That isn't a crime. It's not an offense being here. It's my moral duty to be here. Quote, because it would be wrong for me for one moment to accept that I do not have God-given rights, that I do not have rights, including the right to my beliefs, as everyone in this country has. And that's what it's about. That's it. It's about transgenderism. It's about a belief. I am entitled to my religious belief, and I was told by the principal that I wasn't allowed to have the religious belief anymore. That's what it's about. Now, I want you to hold that thought, that he's adamant that this is his right for his religious belief. He will not comply. He is adamant about, and his deeds are back him up of the statement of a sentiment that he makes here. And aside that, remember about the British case saying someone believing in the green religion had their firmly held beliefs violated, and they won their case in an employment discrimination case that I reported on. And on that point alone, this case evidences injustice. But it shows the Bar Association, or legal guild globally, promotes sustainable development goals. The so-called judiciaries are not independent of that fraud advancing fascist technocracy, or as we'll hear in a little bit, the technique there we've heard of here last week. So this is all part of that. So hold this little religious belief tidbit in your mind as I add one more element showing, as Julian Assange described, as unrealizable justice, where I read another report on this matter, adding to this next most important element. But Irish teacher jailed for the third time for defying an order to stay away from the school that fired him. Another story covering this issue, this event. A teacher in Ireland who says he was fired for his views on gender has been jailed for a third time for refusing to stay home from the school where he used to work. Enoch Burke was found in contempt of the High Court judge on Monday, violating the court's injunction barring him from Wilson Hospital School in Mullingar, about 50 miles west of Dublin. He was suspended by the school in 2022 after publicly objecting to what he called gendered ideology and refusing to address the trans student by their preferred name and pronoun. He was later fired and has launched an appeal. He has continued to show up at the school and has spent more than 400 days in prison after defying a court order to stay away. He was released in June from a stint in Dublin's Mountjoy prison and began going to the school again when the term began late August. The school took legal action, saying Burke's presence was disruptive for staff and students. Burke, who has become a well-known figure in Ireland, claims to be being silenced for his Christian beliefs. Courts have rejected that notion. The Irish High Court judge said in September that it's an insult to every law-abiding citizen for someone who is a subject of the court order to decide unilaterally that it should be ignored. Lawyers have pointed out that Burke can end the legal drama by agreeing to abide by the injunction, which he has refused to do. Quote, "Unless people obey court orders, we cannot really expect of any kind of social order at all," Tom O'Malley, a retired law lecturer at University College Galway, told broadcaster RTE. Quote, "There has to be some kind of system whereby people have to be sanctioned, or at least coerced, or persuaded as much as possible to obey them, and unfortunately beyond imprisonment. There doesn't appear to be the alternative right now." So, religious beliefs aside, if justice were being done, a competent judge would do justice to find that someone thinking themselves more than one individual, more than one individual to acknowledge and has to be referred to in the third person, not present, has to be some sort of multiple personality disorder and needs help. But you're not going to hear that. All right? This is not going to come out of them. But also, I pointed out about the guy's adamant to not comply because of his religious beliefs. At some point, justice requires the judge look at that, and if, as the other professor said, there is no alternative to what we're doing. And the alternative is to keep the guy in jail, and that's not working. It's not justice to continue doing that. And they've come to an impasse. And that was supposed to be ended in justice. And you're then supposed to look at the point where the belief sits back in here, and you notice it was going to work. Why does the green religion get preference over a Christian religion? I'm not making a preference. I'm saying they're both religious beliefs, firmly held. Why aren't they treated equally? In particular, where someone will not comply, period. And there, that's supposed to shift now the burden to the government to show how their laws and their rules and their sanctions are effective in this case. And if they can't, they have to release it. It's another style of injustice. You can't commit murder and just say, I had to murder. We're talking about, in this case, these issues that are not capital crimes, if I can say it that way. But where a penalty is not going to stop you. It's not supposed to be continually put on you because it's an injustice in its own. This is a very interesting story. Not sure why the guy just doesn't stay away from school, even though he hasn't been fired. He hasn't won his case. He didn't win employment back, like the discrimination case. But you see the duality of the treatment and the injustice in the system. And not going after to treat the I think they're mentally abused, where they think that they're more than one person, and are to be referred to in the third person, not present. It's like two people talking to somebody about somebody else not there when you say they. And so we have a bigger problem there as well. But interesting story. It's what you do, but he's doing, he's standing up for what he believes is morally principally right. And I'm thinking, and I'm not saying you go to jail over this, I'm saying you avoid jail. You do things to allow you to avoid jeopardy, and then you're better positioned. This is BTWRLM 601. I'll be with you, tech tips or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned.
Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.